Welcome back to Down to Brass Tacks. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon. You're welcome on the, you're on the air.
I just wanted to ask you one question.
Sure.
How do you consider our postman and our post office?
Our post people? What about them?
How do you consider them? They are owned by the government. The post
Of
office is
course,
a government.
yeah, as a government agency.
All right. So here, when they made that announcement of holding a contest for the people who are really very important to facing this COVID-19 virus horror, and they were going to award winner of the contest from these various departments of the government who are fighting and dealing with this COVID every day. How come the post office was not included in that? They don't have any, they weren't given any mask, I understand. They weren't given any of the things that were required. I mean, they have cashiers dealing with the public, and they've had a lot of people, I believe, going there no more because the banks weren't opened up and they were having to cash the pension checks for us pensioners and different things. I think it's an oversight, don't you think so?
I don't necessarily know that it was an oversight. The post offices for some time have had a level of shielding from the public. I think it had largely to do with burglary more so than anything else. But most of the post offices that you go to, you can't reach out and touch one of the staff. If you want to reach out and touch them, they have to come from behind the screen. So to some extent, the post office problem is one of you protecting yourself from the person who's standing behind you, which should adequately be dealt with by social distancing. Most of the guards would wear masks, and the presumption is that they would interact with the public. But certainly beyond the guards, the challenge of the cashiers who sit in a booth behind a glass thing is not a problem. So I don't disagree. I don't agree necessarily. The postmen who are on their bikes, that's a different matter. But
Yeah.
certainly the postmen who are on their bikes shouldn't be interacting with the public anyhow because you're supposed to have a mailbox.
Well, that's what I understood. I read in the paper from the 1st of April, everybody had to have a post
Oh
box
yeah, for sure.
or they wouldn't get their mail, which is a way of protecting him from handing things to people, you know, that sort of way that's been done before. But I do believe that they should have been given the mask. At very least to the postmen who are riding all over the country the whole day. You know what I'm saying?
I don't know. I mean, my question is, what is the benefit of a mask which is not provided by the postman themselves? If a postman wants to wear a mask, he can. But do I give post people masks to wear and insist that they wear them when what they are doing ultimately they should not be coming into contact with public anyhow? That's my question. I don't see a problem with it, quite frankly, because the masks are so cheap. My question is, why not? But I don't know that you have reneged on any obligation to provide them personal protection when you've done the things that you need to do, which is to say, everyone has to have a mailbox. Mail goes directly in the box and not handed to a person. So we limit their interaction with the public. And then when they're in the office, presumably they would maintain the social distancing or alternatively wear a mask when they're in the office. That can perhaps be a prohibition. I'm not of the opinion that the post people have been treated badly in all of this, though, ma'am.
All right, so they would
All right.
not be considered in this contest they're having.
What contest?
There's a contest to award all the nursing
Oh,
staff and,
yeah.
you know, the first responders, et cetera.
I mean, they're not
Okay.
first responder. They're an essential service. The problem, ma'am, is that if you decided to embrace every essential service, you realize that the list is pretty long, huh? Because you have home helpers who through all of this have been taking care of old people and making sure that they were clean and free from infection. You have persons who have picked up the rubbish, not only in the public but also in the private sector that have cleared the bins. There are people who have dealt with issues of sewage that have cleared sewage drains and so on in this period of time, suck wells and soakaways and whatnot. They've dealt with all of that. So where do you end when you start identifying these essential services? You have a problem. The whole army, all of them is essential services, the police again. So I think the competition is really speaking to what they call the front line as opposed to the supporting structure.
But I don't believe they've been given any days off during the weeks that they've been working. I heard somebody saying, I don't know if that's true.
To the best of my knowledge, that doesn't change. You got the same off days you would have had before. Yeah, Dennis is shaking his head, so he obviously agrees with me. No, nothing has changed. Yeah. All right, ma'am, thank you for your intervention, and I appreciate your concern about the post people. The reality is that postal services are something about which we will have to have a conversation very soon, because I had always argued, and it's even before the COVID, that the postal services were probably the next agency that's going to come up for privatization. Consistent with what has happened in every other developed country of the world where the postal services have been privatized. My expectation certainly is that the postal service of 2025 will be nothing like the postal service of old. And what happened on April the 1st was perhaps just the first step in a long number of changes that will be coming to those postal services. And my expectation is that sooner or later, the postal service will become like TT Post in Trinidad and Tobago, which is a private entity, and that will mean many significant changes for the way it functions. I mean, the reality is that postal services are so lightly used these days, you know, compared to what it was before when you had everybody's bills being processed and whatnot. But now, an increasing number of people receive bill payments and so on electronically. So, yeah. Down to brass tacks, good afternoon. 434-1790, you can call us, 434-1790, or you can email me at peter.w.wickham@gmail.com. We have about 30 minutes remaining on the program. It's now 1:23. We go until 2 p.m., and I do hope that you will call and chat with me about various issues. Down to brass tacks.
Hello?
Yes, good afternoon, sir.
Yes, good afternoon.
How are you doing?
And a divine greeting. I'm blessed, you know.
Divine greetings.
And divine greetings, yes.
One of my special greetings, boy.
This last day first, you know. Mm. Yeah, this is a great day, too, to reflect upon history. Mm-hmm. This is May the 5th. This was the day that His Imperial Majesty Emperor this last day first had returned victorious to Ethiopia.
Okay.
After the aggression of Benito Mussolini. Mm-hmm. And I would just give a paraphrase of what he spoke to the League at the time. When they were aggressed by Ethiopian people. At that time, you will know that the League of Nations was basically what the United Nations stands for today. And I will give a record of what he said. He said, I now renew once more the protest which I have previously submitted on the grounds of the transgressions of treaties to the detriment of the Ethiopian people and on account of the violence perpetrated against it. I declare before the world that the Emperor of Ethiopia, the Ethiopian government, and the people will not accept anything done to them by force. I further declare that they will do everything in their power to see international order triumph, to have the League Covenant respected, and to have the authority and the territory which is theirs restored to them. I ask the 52 nations who have given a promise to the Ethiopian people that they will come to their aid at the time of the aggression against them in order to prevent the aggressor from defeating them. I ask these 52 nations for their support by upholding their promise. What are you willing to do for Ethiopia? You great powers who have promised to give guarantees of collective security, lest more nations be extinguished and the fate which has overtaken Ethiopia shall befall them as well. Have you considered what kind of assistance to provide so that Ethiopia's liberty shall not be destroyed and her territorial integrity shall be respected? You representatives of the world assembled here, I have come to you to Geneva to carry out the saddest duty that has befallen an emperor. What answer am I to take back to my people?
Okay, sir. Thank you so much for that contribution and reminding us about the importance of the 5th of May, certainly to members of the Rastafarian community for whom Emperor Selassie is the incarnation of the Almighty. Don DeBrastax, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon, Mr. Beckham. How are
Mr.
you?
Mr. Straker's Tenantry, how are you, sir? It's good to hear
I'm
you.
I'm good. I'm good.
Greetings and salutations to your good self.
You think, Mr. Beckham, that when this COVID is over, that you would be able to take up the Minister of Tourism on his offer of a staycation?
Me? I don't do staycations, really. I haven't done one in years.
But you think that the average person would be able to do it?
I think that there will be people who are able to do it, but they're probably not average.
Well, then I don't see the sense in making the offer.
Well, let me ask the question to you this way. Do you think, who else would you prefer to sell the room to?
Mr. Vikram, when this is over, after all the wax black, we ain't going to be able to win the staycation. So take that off the table. Let me start from there. Right?
Strikers, I would say, before you go into this thing, let me say further. Sir, you going any further, let me say this. We're going to have an awful lot of valuable hotel properties that are going to be empty for a long time to come. In a situation where I were a hotel owner and a person says to me, would you take $50 a night for a room that normally goes for $200? And I have the $50, I may want to go and spend an evening. You know, you may have a little side piece somewhere, and you may want, not you specifically, because I know you're not into that, but someone, and you may want to take your little side chick and spend, you know, a night or two in the Hilton, and I'm being serious, sir. I'm just saying that what the minister proposed is not the ideal.
Don't let me wander off.
It's not the ideal, but I think it reflects a reality that says that we're going to have to see if we can pull ourselves up by the bootstraps for the time being, because they ain't got no tourists to come.
No, I think that it is looking at reality.
It is looking at reality.
It is looking at reality.
Mm-hmm.
And that no tourist is going to be coming, and you've got to look for use for the hotel plan.
So what is your option?
But listen to me. Mm-hmm. That we cannot take up the $50 that got to help pay the water bill to go into the hotel. That's really the problem. The only part of the water bill getting paid, that's why the water authority is so much problem. But I really want to talk to you about water today.
But this is an important issue, Strikers, that I do feel that we can explore, because I'm not being facetious when I say this, right? I don't know that there are people in Barbados for whom the difference will not be $50 to pay the water bill. For that person, they pay the water bill. I don't believe a staycation is for that person. But sir, there are people who would still have been working that may be able to find a $50 to go to a hotel, especially if the customer's parking out in the car.
Mr. Wickham, I'm talking about average people.
But then there's some of them that are average.
No, Mr. Wickham.
All right, let me give you an example, Straker.
Hold a minute, Mr. Wickham. Hold on.
No. Listen to me. There are people who work in garbage collection, right? You would call them average. They call them loaders. They're average. They have worked consistently throughout this crisis, you know. Their economic situation has not been affected anyway. Because they're working as hard as they worked before, and they're getting paid. Now, those persons are the type of persons that I believe you can target. And you can say, look, throughout this COVID, you did hazardous work. You got paid. You have a $50 or $100. Would you like to spend a weekend in a hotel? Is that person not average?
Mr. Wickham, they got to reach out and help one another. You're unaware of what is going on.
Man, I'm more aware than you might realize.
You are not aware of what's going on. Anyhow, let me take a look at water.
All right. You know, it's funny that whenever we reach a point where there can be some consensus on an issue, you always want to run away. Anyhow, you go along down by the water.
Mr. Wickham.
You go along by the water. Go along.
I listen to the program Sunday night, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we had the emphasis on agriculture. Water is the main ingredient in agriculture, whether food crop or livestock. And right now, we are going through the worst drought ever. And we got some water mains that are in the worst condition ever. Those two things don't go together with agriculture, Mr. Wicker. I would like to ask you a question now. You know what percentage of the water that we are pumping, that we are losing back into the ground?
I don't know the percentage. What's the percentage?
The last figure, the Minister of Water Resources said, was 60%. When we first went for water meters, they showed that we were losing 60% on. I don't like to call it losing, because that going right back where it should be. But we were losing it out of the system. The former administration left some pipes. I hear Tallboy called the four. But they were able to reduce it from 60 to 50. Since then, because they were trying to force water through the same old pipe, it gone back up to 60. So the first thing I would like me to do is to get around to laying some pipes and bring it down. You know what the market standard is for leaks?
I don't know. What is it?
The market standard is 5%. So we need to get up to 95. So if we can lay some pipes, the same four that was laid and bring down 10, they can lay them in fours and bring down 10. And we could eventually, if we get to 60% save and 40% loss, we would be comfortable. If we get to 80%, we would be able to reduce the pumping and let the reservoirs and the wells fall back up. If we get up to the 95, we will be able to sell all the desal water. Right now, the minister is talking about commissioning two more desal plants. I don't know if he can use them or send that water by truck. But if he send it through the same old pipe, it means we can lose the same 60% or more. So the emphasis should be on laying pipes. And I ain't hearing nobody saying that. All I hear the saying is what it would cost. But whatever it would cost, divide it by five and do it over a five-year period. Let me hear what you got to say about that.
I think it's entirely reasonable. I don't have a difficulty.
Well, see if you could reinforce it and see if you could get it, well, restarted, because I must say it was started.
Yeah.
Remember that they started in Robert Street,
yeah.
The complaint about all the inconvenience,
mm-hmm.
up to Government Hill, a right up, but they saw a 10% reduction.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Let the minister start from there.
You call this program to pick fights, and when I don't pick fights with you, you don't know what to tell yourself. No.
When
I agree with you, you don't know what to do yourself.
That's not true, Mr. Wicker.
But that's not what I say. I agree with you. You were stumped.
I was stumped.
You were stumped. You were mumbling. You didn't know what to say yourself because you're accustomed to me disagreeing. So I agree with you. You stumped,
Mr. Wicker. Is that I just be sure about myself? So he's not going to worry about another fella.
Okay.
Anything I say is that between me and my Lord.
Ah, yes.
So I don't got to worry about another fella. Not even you.
All right, well,
anyhow,
you
have a nice
you
day.
You go with God. You go safely. Thank you for calling. Down to Brass Tacks. I had a conversation with a gentleman who is well known to you. His name is Mr. Michael Lashley, a.k.a. Lashes. He agreed to come on the program today and unfortunately has been precluded from doing so by some high court matters. He has, however, asked that I mention a suggestion that he's been making, both to myself and Dennis, that we, under this COVID period, make use of the drive-in cinema. I noticed that in Germany, and he also noticed that the drive-in cinema is still very much in action because drive-in theaters have the social distancing quality that we can use in that you only go to the drive-in with family members, presumably persons that you live with. The cars are naturally socially distanced. You can tune in on the FM band to hear what is going on the stage, and you can enjoy some kind of a show. So Michael was proposing that we have a kind of a extempo competition or some other kind of crop over competition, Junior Monarch or something of that nature, at the drive-in cinema, making use of the drive-in cinema stage and where persons can come with the picnic baskets if they want, sit outside the car or even remain inside the car, socially distance and enjoy a show. In this situation where we do not have many alternative options for entertainment, his suggestion is that this could be the type of thing that we do know and that would people would respond well to simply because right now there's not a whole lot else to do. The suggestion caught my eye and it caught my ear because I did see a documentary on drive-in cinemas in Germany, which have continued to operate throughout the crisis because they do not breach the social distancing rules. They're community-based. People were able to come with their families, and they can enjoy a show or some other form of entertainment. Frankly, even if they stay in the car and sleep, it's better than staying at home. And his suggestion is that we can do something like this. So the email or the WhatsApp he suggested is that it would have perfect social distancing. He was hoping the NCF could explore it. Junior Monarch, Piccadilly Crop, maybe they can have a pay-per-view deal with CBC that others could watch at home. But it may provide some amount of option, especially bearing in mind that we still have another month or two to go before crop over. And the presumption is that by then we may be allowed to gather in groups of 25, which would mean that the band can sit together and play under certain circumstances. And it would mean that you save some aspect of the activity. I wanted Michael Ashley to come on the program himself and give this idea because I don't want to be accused of stealing anyone's ideas. I thought it was an excellent suggestion. And I do hope that somebody from the NCF is listening, or maybe the minister himself. We can prompt him to respond to this suggestion, which was a positive one that has come from former Minister of Housing under the DLP, as to what we can probably do with our current facilities under this situation. There is a hunger and a thirst for entertainment in Barbados now. I think that a part of the problems that we are seeing with people torturing chickens and torturing animals and making nuisances in themselves with kites and whatnot relates to the fact that people just need something to do with their time and their hands. And I think that we should help in that way. So the drive-in cinema, drive-in theater, the idea of using it is a proposal that's on the table. I didn't talk about the chicken torture, but I think most of you who know me know my concerns. I have not heard anyone being charged. I understand the individuals at the center of it are minors. I hope that their parents will be charged because for you to allow your child to do something like that, you're a pretty sick individual. I disagree fundamentally with Admiral that it is nothing different to cutting off a chicken's neck. We talked last week a lot about animal rights and animal cruelty, and we said that putting an animal to death is not cruel in and of itself. Torturing an animal is always cruel. So there is no way that we can get away from that. Beating a chicken like a piñata is not slaughtering a chicken. It's not executing a chicken. So let's be clear. It was torture. And if the children cannot be punished because they're underage, then the parents need to be punished. But somebody needs to be punished to send a signal in that regard. Down to Brass Tacks, good afternoon.
So you can go park out again then?
I'm sorry?
I can go park out again?
But you know that you ain't parking out nowhere. I know you are the last person that will be parking out for several reasons. One is that you don't need to, and the other is you ain't in the parking out nothing. You passed that stage a long time ago. I know where you spend your Saturday nights, and it's not parking out.
I ask it on behalf of all those other people
who's park out.
I get down by Batstrock or no more because of this COVID thing. I just ask on the baby half.
But what are these people doing, though? That's a good point.
They got pork chop with my name on it. They hear about a glut of pork chop.
Apparently, there's apparently a glut of pork.
Yeah.
But so, that's for all of us. So because he's putting a sauce on a Sahara stop. So I guess there's an abundance of pork knocking about.
But Peter, this brings me to what I want to talk about, David, mm-hmm. agriculture. And the failures of government, to be totally honest. Because you're telling me that we don't have the facilities to smoke pork or whatever. We can to slaughter whatever pigs are there, make bacon and have them in storage somewhere. This has always been our problem.
But you know I'm not gonna get into a conversation with you about what to do with pork.
No, but hold God. But okay, let's talk about onions then. Because the onions is the same situation.
You smart the onions.
We end up with a whole bunch of onions in a lot of cases I've heard about. Mm. And we were supposed to have, a drying shed for onions.
Mm-hmm.
That never came about, or what have you.
Nikita, in fairness though, on the pork issue, I met a gentleman outside the gym a few months ago, and he told me that he actually gave up a job, you know, a regular business, to get into business doing exactly that, smoking pork. Smoking meat, generally. So he bought a fairly sophisticated smoking operation, and his thing was to smoke meat and sell to hotels and sell to individuals and whatnot. And he said one of the biggest challenges is that if you smoke your meat at an event, some of it will sell. The problem is that smoking takes such a long time. You can't smoke it while people, you have to anticipate the level of sales to be able to prepare for that. And he also made the point that Barbadian tastes tend not to respond well to smoking.
Peter, that's garbage.
No, that garbage, you might say this is a reality. So bacon and that kind of thing is not something that sells well.
When you are faced with options or what have you, sometimes it is in the variety of things that you're given, the different ways. It doesn't mean that you don't necessarily like a certain thing. You might like another variety of somebody else might like it, but if we present with the same opportunity.
Nikita, you know what I don't understand about you? I'm telling you that this is a man that said, are you working for a company?
The man got involved in it. I agree.
He got involved in the business and the man said, well, let me try a thing. And he said, it is working, but these are the challenges that he is having. And one of them is that Bajans are not really into the smoked pork.
But you just are telling me that it's working. But they're
just not working as well as he would like.
Challenges are there to be overcome. And the challenges that we have in Barbados in a lot of cases is that we create these mountains and then or these obstacles and say, we can't get past them.
Suffice to say, you were calling by saying, you started the conversation by saying that the gentleman, that we don't have facilities in Barbados to smoke pork. And I'm saying to you that apparently we do.
I did not, hold on, just a second, Peter. Hold on. What I tried to say is that you're telling me, I asked the question, if you're telling me that we have all this pork, right, that you have no facility in order to store it, because this is what I'm trying to bring across the larger point with relating to agriculture and the challenges that I keep on hearing people having in terms of the farmers or whatever, is that if they produce a quantity of something now and they can't dispose of it immediately, then it goes away. They can't store it. They can't. There isn't an alternative method or option for them to process it, to can it, or what have you. These are challenges that have been faced in agriculture for years. And to me, the question, the problems are a failure of government. And I'm not talking about now in terms of necessarily failures of an administration, but a failure of government. To solve certain problems.
Yeah.
How many years have you been hearing about the problem of predator arsony? How many, Peter? How many times have farmers complained and said that in a lot of cases, a lot of people have been refused to get involved in agriculture or farming because of the predator arsony problem?
Agreed.
Now we have this whole thing with COVID, and all of a sudden you hear a lot of farmers, the problem explodes now even more.
You get the crops more valuable.
On this whole conversation on Sunday, because I actually replayed it so I could hear it on Monday, the discussion, we are going to be introducing technology for drones, with drones or whatever. And I'm asking myself, you're saying don't look back at the past and see what's happened in the past. And it's not going to be a talk shop. And we are moving forward. I want that to happen, but I keep on saying, how many times have you heard people come on this program and complain about the noise from kites? Now tell me, Peter, tell me, please, if all these years, what is the challenge with a government, with any government, simply saying, listen, this is noise pollution, this is legislation, if you fly a kite at this time or whatever and it's continuing there, it gets cut down. And you get in charge.
That part I don't understand. I don't understand what's so hard about that.
No, exactly, Peter. So therefore, there has to be more in the mortar than the pestle in a lot of cases, and a lot of the reasons why a lot of these things in Barbados do not work is not necessarily because of directly of what you've been told. I heard you speak in terms of the water authority, and engineers and that sort of thing. I respect engineers, yes, but not everything that the representatives of the water authority would have been telling you are necessarily related to the problems from an engineering point of view. In a lot of cases, they're excuses, right? I'm not. Yes, there's a drought. Yes, we have problems. All that sort of stuff. Yes. But you have to ask yourself in a lot of cases, how long something has to go on for, and that causes a problem, and people complain about, and then people are simply ignored. I have never had a problem with water in Barbados. I've never lived in a place that had a problem. But I'm telling you right now, Peter, if I had to live in St. John or wherever, and I had to be carrying a bucket to get water every single day or whatever, you're my representative, are you getting back in power again? No. But a lot of Bajans accept foolishness from people because they got honorable in their name or whatever, or because they're a politician, or because they named this or whatever. And you have to call a spade a spade. We have issues in agriculture because successive administrations and successive governments have failed to do the jobs that have to be done in paying attention to these things. Right? I can't make any plan of that. And we have this whole conversation, too, about agriculture as opposed to marijuana. And I'm like, but hold on, marijuana is a part of agriculture as well. And the challenge that farmers have, that we've always had, is in terms of the value that their work can produce. And my position would be, listen, why don't you give a farmer the opportunity to grow a small portion of a high-valued crop and then also grow, the larger extent of his fields then can be growing food or whatever you want to do. There has to be a deeper analysis of the agricultural product in Barbados than is happening now. And I've heard government getting involved in doing certain things. And I'm saying to myself, hold on, don't we have Barbados Agriculture, the BADMC, in their name is marketing and development. And one of the weaknesses we have had in Barbados, again, is in terms of people not understanding the critical nature of marketing.
Mm-hmm.
I worked, as you know, in the hotel industry. And there was a time when I was managing a hotel. And my intention was to fix the menu when I got in there and say, listen, I want to produce a local menu so that then we're using breadfruit and cassavas or whatever. But the determination of the menu was not made by me. It is made by the owner and the concept that the owner has. And they came up with this idea, we want to have something called an away from home or whatever. We want British visitors to come to Barbados and feel that they're at home. So therefore, what do? We can give them shepherd's pie or whatever. We can give them food that reminds them of home. Mm-hmm. Not saying we have a product in Barbados that we can produce and sell to people and then that the people will come and enjoy. Hmm. And one of the things I look at and say, okay, why don't we have the BADMC and government, if you want to say, going around to the hotels and telling the chef, listen, let's have a discussion in terms of what the menus are.
Okay. Yo, Nikita, we're going to have to make a run, though, because I've seen the next horse already taking up his position. It's almost time to go, and the board is still full. So let me try to clear it off before I go. Thanks a lot for chatting. It was good to talk to you. Dr. Brastax, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Wickham.
Yes, sir. How are you doing?
Good. I want to touch on a topic here, so I want to ask you a question to start off with, though.
Sure.
You got a problem. This is reflected the last Tuesday. We were talking about the monkeys when you had Mr. Norville and Ms. Gilhan online.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I am a farmer as well as a hunter.
Right.
For the same monkeys.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay? I want to enlighten you all about some of the misinformation that Mr. Norville put out there regarding to the cost that people are paid to cull these monkeys. It is not $50 to start.
It's $15.
$15, right. 1-5, and right. It was this, like, this is 1989.
No, it was an oversight, because somebody said it.
Hunters in Barbados.
Sir.
Because they got hunters and they got shooters.
Sir, let me just make it clear that the reference to 50 was a misunderstanding. I read 50, and someone thought I said...
Silence.
15, someone thought I said 50.
All the talk about, we are building in the areas where the monkeys live.
Mm.
Now, I am 46 years old. My grandfather, who died in 1977 or 78, I believe, hunted monkeys before me. My father did, and he's also now deceased. And back in those days, almost all of Barbados was under cultivation. Since then, we have had 50-plus plantations go out of cultivation, which means the monkeys have more ground to cover, more ground to basically living, more habitat, because a lot of these places are no runway and bush. I can sit down here and list plantations off the top of my head for the whole day for you. That's all the production.
Sir.
You say that.
Sir.
You've got also a person.
Sir, are you listening to me?
Neighborhoods.
Sir.
Areas that have planted.
Caller. Stop. You're listening to your radio. You're not listening to me. All right. Let's discontinue the call then, because I'm trying to ask a question and I can't hear him. So I suspect he's listening to the radio and not listening to me. Either that or it's a pre-recorded lecture, neither of which we can entertain. My question to the caller is really very simple. I just want to know, because we have limited time, what does he think of the torture? And secondly, what does he think of the solution, as opposed to receiving a lecture on everything that was wrong with what the gentleman said in terms of the placement of monkeys? But of course, we can't do that because he wasn't listening to me. Final call. Good afternoon and welcome. Oops. Yeah, okay. Sorry, we don't have enough time for the final call. We're going to have to run. I want to thank all of you for making the program what it was. We had a lot of fun this afternoon, and I think that we also dealt with some serious business on the program. And I want to thank all of you who made the format possible. Dennis Johnson was your producer. Special thanks to Dennis. Larry Mears is next in the studio. I'm off next Tuesday, so I will see you. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm here next Tuesday. My apologies. It's the Tuesday after that I'm off. So I'll see you guys next Tuesday, and we continue our conversations then. And I do hope you take care of yourself in the meantime.